Hello, welcome to The Debate. I'm Kavit Afwai. Beirut has filed a complaint to the United Nations against Israel over its spying on Lebanon. If Israel's spying, along with its violation of Lebanese airspace, constitutes a flagrant violation of international law and continuous aggression on Lebanese lands, Lebanese people, the military, security, and civilian institutions, then why has not the UN done anything about it? That's one of the questions we're going to be asking in this edition of The Debate. We'll also discuss the row over gas between Israel and Lebanon and see what the chances are of a clash between Israel and Hezbollah.
Lebanon has filed a complaint with the UN against Israel over Tel Aviv's continued espionage activities against the Arab nation. Beirut has reportedly accused the Israeli regime of violating its sovereignty. Lebanese authorities have dismantled many Israeli espionage cells and arrested dozens of people in connection with such networks. Israel has detonated some of its spying gears in the past remotely and using jet fighters. This after they were detected by Lebanese authorities. The Lebanese people and officials have always considered Israel as their country's arch enemy since the regime was created on occupied Palestinian land in the wake of World War II. Israel's aggression against Beirut particularly intensified after Tel Aviv was forced by Hezbollah in 2000 to retreat the buffer zone it had carved out in southern Lebanon. Since then, Israel warplanes have been violating Lebanon's airspace almost on a daily basis. Tel Aviv waged a deadly war against Lebanon in 2006, which claimed the lives of hundreds of Lebanese civilians. Lebanon has also on some occasion accused Israel of violating its waters. In 2013, a Lebanese official said Israel was digging a well to drill oil and natural gas 4 kilometers from Lebanese offshore reserves. That, he said, would allow Tel Aviv to move horizontally under the sea and extract oil from the seabed in Lebanese waters. Following the report, Hezbollah's leader Sayed Hassan Nasrallah warned Israel that it would face the resistance movement's response if it continued to draw closer to Lebanese maritime borders. Lebanon has lodged many complaints against Israel with the UN, but the world body has failed to address the issue. The Lebanese complaints have not been discussed at the UN Security Council, where Israel's staunchest ally, the US, has so far vetoed many resolutions condemning Israel over its aggression against regional nations.
Our guest for this edition of The Debate, historian and political advisor Jeffrey Alderman, joins us from London. We have a professor at the Notre Dame University, George Labaki, who joins us from Beirut. Gentlemen, welcome. George Labaki, Lebanon's caretaker foreign minister. It has not only filed a complaint to the UN, he has sent similar letters to four ministers of nations belonging to the 15-member Security Council, as well as the Arab League, as well as the European Union Foreign Policy Chief, Secretary General of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, Chairman of the Non-Aligned Movement, the Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. Will any action be taken against Israel that will change the Israeli regime's behavior?
I'm afraid that past history tells us that Israel has never complied with Security Council resolutions. Concerning the Lebanese situation, Israel has a long story of breaching and violating Lebanese sovereignty. Things changed after the Israeli lost the war of 2006, the aggression they had initiated against Lebanon, and which ended in their complete defeat and withdrawal from the Lebanese territory. This is a new situation, whereas Israelis are more careful when they are conducting their aggressions against Lebanese people and state and Lebanese national sovereignty. But I am afraid such violations are doomed to continue as long as the Security Council is unable to move, as long as the United States and some European states are eager to use the veto power in order to block any resolution condemning Israel.
Well, Jeffrey Alderman, I mean, aside from the fact that this is against international law, are you aware of the depth of Israel's spying on Lebanon? Based on the reports that I'm looking at, in so many words, it actually covers the entire country of Lebanon. The dangers of the Israeli telecom towers in Lebanese territory, along with the telecommunications ministry announcement that Israel had installed surveillance posts along the border with Lebanon. I mean, this is a violation of a country's sovereignty. Why is Israel so keen on such intense spying on Lebanon?
Why was an Israeli soldier killed on the Lebanese border the week before last? Please answer that question.
Let me ask the question from George Labaki. Jeffrey Alderman, George Labaki just posed the question. Can you answer that?
Yes, it was considered as a personal act, as stated by an official communique of the Lebanese army. And I think things should not given, should be another scope or a broader explanation. It was very clear this happens all the time between states, between countries. It is a very limited action, as stated by officially by the Lebanese army.
Well, I think that's a very poor answer to my question. Unfortunately, there are two governments in Lebanon at the moment. One is the official government in Beirut, and the other is the unofficial government headed by Hezbollah and its leadership. And in those circumstances, Israel is within its rights under international law in order to take such measures as are necessary to protect its own sovereignty. And incidentally, in your extremely biased introduction to this program, You erred in saying that Israel had failed to comply with Security Council resolutions. Sir, Israel has complied with every United Nations resolution which it is required to obey.
What part of what I introduced was biased here, Jeffrey Alderman? With all due respect, I'm looking at my intro. What part of it was biased towards Lebanon?
Well, your intro, yes, Your intro referred to Tel Aviv. The government of Israel is in Jerusalem, is it not? Not Tel Aviv. Your intro referred to, implied, more than implied, that the creation of Israel was in fact an act of aggression, when the creation of Israel, the Jewish state, was as a result of a United Nations resolution. You can't have your cake and eat it. If you want UN resolutions to be obeyed, then you have to accept, and my colleague in Lebanon has to accept, the legitimacy of the re-establishment of the Jewish state. That's why I think your introduction was highly biased. Why did you refer to Tel Aviv and not Jerusalem as the capital of Israel?
And not to mention, why is it then you must argue about the settlement activities being illegal? Let's not get off the subject here. I do appreciate that, however, Jeffrey Alderman. Let's get on with what reactions I have seen, Jeffrey Alderman, and tell us if this is justified.
Let me say something, if you allow me.
Yes, sure. Go ahead. George Labaki, go ahead.
Hezbollah is a Lebanese political party that is member of the Lebanese government officially. Also, in that government of which Hezbollah is member was able to get the confidence of the Lebanese parliament. And in the official statement, in the work program of the government, it has stated very clearly the triangle between people, resistance, and army. So we cannot talk about duplicity or duplication of power in Lebanon. Hezbollah is member of a government that gained confidence in the Lebanese parliament that is elected by people, of course.
Jeffrey Alderman, do you have a response to that?
Well, I think that answer was being economical with the truth. In fact, in South Lebanon, bordering on Israel, Hezbollah has created a state within a state. And it's also unfortunate, I think we have to accept this, that the conflict in Syria, the bloody civil war in Syria, has spilt over into the Lebanon. Now, that is none of Israel's doing, but unfortunately, within the past few days, missiles have been launched from South Lebanon into Israel. What does my colleague in Beirut want Israel to do? Just stand idly by and let the missiles fall?
You're somehow equating the missiles fired from Lebanon into Israel as being the work of Hezbollah there, Jeffrey Alderman, which is not the case. At this point, it is said that these extremist groups are trying to provoke Israel into waging a war, of course, into Lebanon, which subsequently would be involving
Israel,
Hezbollah.
Even ahead, Israel.
Yes.
Even Israel had acknowledged in official statements that it was not the work of Hezbollah. Here, I think I want to go a little bit backward. The past Israeli attacks against Lebanon, in South Lebanon, since 1967, at the beginning, of course, against Palestinian armed presence, but later on against Lebanese territory, has led, in fact, to the creation of resistance movement. So I think this is, in a way, it was a response to a continuous cycle of aggression and bombardment of Lebanon and basically of South Lebanon. So could people stay inactive year after year if they see their country and territory attacked by any other outsider or any other foreign power?
And that's a question I'd like to pose to you, Jeffrey Alderman. And I like to put that in the context of what I found interesting. This is a headline of the Jewish press, which said, Israel's next war must start in Lebanon, in which the next confrontation must start with heavy bombing attacks that would minimize later damage to Israeli cities. Is that really what Israel is thinking of doing, you think? Is that a possibility? And they say it with such a calm in this particular piece.
No, I frankly don't think that's what the Israeli government is thinking. The Israeli government, I think, and the Israeli people are far more concerned about the situation in Syria. Now, at the moment, it looks as if President Assad in Syria has the upper hand. And whatever one may think of President Assad, and goodness knows I've been critical of him, at least when he was or is in power, the border between Syria and Israel has been quiescent. And I think the best hope for the Israeli government is that President Assad triumphs in this civil war, bloody and terrible though it is. And this in turn, I think, will bring some stability to the Lebanese-Israeli border. That's my hope at any rate.
Chris Lebucke, I need to ask you this because this has come out in this.
I think, no, if I may here interfere, I think the Syrian conflict has spilled over not only to Lebanon, to Jordan, and to the Sinai Peninsula. And I think we are witnessing a big dramatic development of the situation. And I'm afraid if the Syrian conflict is not brought quickly to an end, it will spill over to all the states, to most of the Middle Eastern countries, and also to the states, Arab states surrounding Israel.
Let me take a quick time out here.
Whilst I wouldn't actually...
Go ahead, Jeffrey Alderman, go ahead.
Whilst I wouldn't actually go as far as my colleague in Beirut, I do actually agree with the thrust of his last comments. I think that the civil war in Syria has spilled over into other countries. I think the situation in the Sinai Peninsula is somewhat different, but hopefully the military government now in charge of Egypt will be able to deal with that situation. As I'm led to believe, it has promised or undertaken to the Israeli government in Jerusalem that it will do.
Very well. Quick time out here. Take a listen to our viewer comments as posted.
If you allow me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I think maybe at a point, Israel is interested, of course, and has an interest to see the internal destruction of Syria, the weakening of its army. But also, we have to acknowledge that the rise of hundreds of fundamentalist groups whose agenda now is against the Assad regime but who could quickly turn against anybody, including Israel, and who are able to conduct an unconventional war, I mean terrorist attacks, that finally would threaten the whole Middle East. For this reason, I think it is very urgent that the international community attempts to put an end to that Syrian internal conflict, because I am afraid that the spillover could be very dramatic. Here I want to point out that Lebanon is hosting now more than 1 million refugees. Of course, we have to welcome them. They are fleeing their country, but we cannot ignore the security risks that that also entails, also in terms of the whole Middle East stability, regional stability.
Very well. Now we're going to take a quick time out to listen to some of the viewer comments posted on the Facebook page. Let's take a listen.
The Lebanese army shall stand with Hezbollah to counter Israel. Don't expect any help from the UN. Israel, the UN, and the US are connected in every violation in the world. That is the reason why the UN cannot take any action.
Just some of the viewer comments there. Jeffrey Alderman, Israel has found a new friend. It is now out in the open, and that's Saudi Arabia, of which Saudi Arabia has given Lebanon recently $3 billion in aid. Now, I'd like to find out your views on this alliance vis-a-vis Lebanon.
I think this is very important, and you're quite right to raise this. There is incredible, though it might have seemed a year ago, or even 9 months ago, there is, I won't say an alliance, an understanding between the governments of Israel and Saudi Arabia, initially because of their joint concern over Iran. There has even been very informed speculation about Saudi Arabia giving the Israeli Air Force some sort of facility, we're not quite sure what, in Saudi Arabia, should Israel, and this is a big question, should Israel choose to attack Iran? But so far as the Lebanon is concerned, I think the governments of Saudi Arabia and Israel are of one mind here. And I do agree with my colleague in Beirut that the rise of fanatical fundamentalist groups, particularly in the north of Syria, on the Turkish border, does pose a threat to the whole of the region. And obviously, Riyadh and Jerusalem have a joint interest in seeing that this particular fire is quenched as quickly as possible.
By the way, Jeffrey Alderman, a quick question, since you are steadfast on Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. Why is it that the United States doesn't have their embassy in Jerusalem and they have it in Tel Aviv?
Interestingly, the American Congress passed an act of Congress mandating that the embassy should be relocated from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, but owing to the quirks of the American Constitution, it's possible for successive American presidents to ignore this. So that's the answer to your question.
Very well. George Labaki, so our guest there says, yes, the alliance between Israel and Saudi Arabia, it's out in the open. Now, there's a deduction made based on the recent terrorist attacks that have happened inside Lebanon, the most prominent one being the one that targeted the Iranian embassy, the twin bomb blast that claimed the life of an Iranian diplomat. Now, if these two are an alliance, isn't there then by default an association that could be made with Israel also being behind this? We have a deduction here made that terrorist attacks in Lebanon were carried out to serve the interests of the Israeli regime. Do you see it that way? Do you agree with that?
Yes, let me first say that nobody is against strengthening the Lebanese army. So hopefully this will be respected. Past promises of aid from most Gulf countries were not or very partially respected. Now, concerning now the open alliance between Israel and Saudi Arabia, well, logically and objectively and rationally, when two sides are allied against a common target, so it's normal that they cooperate and conduct covert or open operations against their foes or enemies. So I think this is a clear logical analysis.
Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. Let me thank our guests. Historian, political advisor Jeffrey Elderman spoke to us from London, and you were just listening to the professor at the Notre Dame University, George Lobachy, from Beirut. Thanks for watching another edition of The Debate. From Mikova Tapwa and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.